No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. I'm glad to be back with you, Maria. I've been in Chicago for a week and literally just walked in the door, so it's great to be back. And we have a special guest tonight that you're going to introduce. And then later in the show, I'm going to talk briefly about the fact that we have five new co-sponsors on our statehood bill in Congress, and I believe that's the most we've gotten in a, you know, since the bill was introduced. We got, you know, in the very beginning, we got just got a ton of them, and then they've been coming in one or two at a time, but it seems that we've had a landslide lately. So we'll do a shout-out to those people at the end of the show, but let's get our guest, our returning guest, on. Now, first, let me say hello to you. How are you, Maria? How's your week been? Hello.
But I'm doing fine. Thank you, Michael. Okay. And as I said, I left Chicago a week ago and you arrived this week. So we missed each other.
Well, and you know what? You told me that the weather was perfect when you were out there and the weather was perfect when we were out there. So they
It was?
Yeah. While California is burning up and the southeast is sinking in floods, the weather in Chicago was just, I mean, it was 75 to 78 in day with no humidity, and it was beautiful.
We have Jules Hurst, who we've had before as a guest, and Jules and I have met over the years in the various iterations in my broadcast career, and she is a much sought after business and social etiquette expert. She actually is the co-author of the book The Power of Civility, and she founded her company, which is Etiquette Consulting Incorporated. And of particular interest to both the senator and I is Jules' mission, which is dedicated to empowering individuals and groups with confidence and essential social grace, where she conducts workshops and seminars and webinars, not only for business professionals, but newly elected officials, college students, and our young folks. So she's regarded as a foremost authority in business etiquette, and she's been interviewed and quoted by a bunch of media outlets, including but not limited to NBC, ABC, MTV, Good Morning America, the San Diego Tribune, and the Chicago Tribune, and she's gracing us with her expertise this afternoon and evening. Jules, welcome to the program, and thank you for making the time.
Oh, thank you for having me back again.
It's so much fun because the senator and I have talked about how he and I, in fact, I just had lunch with a buddy this afternoon, and I said, Michael, I don't think that we've disagreed even on any topic other than you're a Democrat and I'm a Republican. We agree on more than we don't. And I never hold that against you or anybody who disagrees with me because I'm always respectful. In fact, I would rather not talk about things that I am in disagreement on with people because there's a whole host of other topics that you don't have to go to that aren't as controversial or polarizing or emotion-giving.
Well, you know, I have to say to Jules, there's no lack of confidence here in Washington, D.C., but I can't find the grace for the life of me. I can't, you know, I can't find any, there's no graciousness left that I can find, Jules. So that's really why we so desperately wanted you back on the show to talk about this, because I just find it's horrible. And Maria and I talked last week because it's on both sides. You know, I received an email from a woman in California, actually, elected representative in Washington State, who said, electing these two women, this was the headline of the email, electing these two women will drive Trump crazy. And the first thought I had in my mind is that why we want to elect somebody? We want to elect somebody to annoy this man. We don't want to elect them because they're a good candidate or because they have great ideas or good
experience. Or they're qualified.
Right. We just want to get even with the people that are trying to get even with us. Where does that take us? You know. So please enlighten us. What do we need to do to get beyond this rancor? Do you have...
Well, I would like to ask, Jules, what your opinion is of the political discourse, especially since President Trump was elected.
It is, well, as you know, politics and manners are two of my favorite topics. I love living in the United States of America, and I love being civil. So, you know, this show is absolutely by far one of my favorites because you handle both issues. And since to answer your question, since the president has been in office, it's been an upward trajectory of lack of civility. And it always starts from the top. So when we start spewing things, nonsense, that don't stay on topic and start offending people, when you say all and every, you know, to describe a... to describe anything, you are putting your foot in your mouth and you're starting issues that don't need to be there. Stick to, you know, if he would just stick to his point and shut up with all of the extra stuff, his opinion, his off the cuff, it might not have been so bad. And I don't know how we go backwards except to go back to the foundation of what civility means. It's just formal politeness and courtesy in behavior or speech. Speech, Mr. President, we have to go back to that. And it starts from the top.
Jules, could you repeat that? Because there was a little glip there. I didn't hear exactly what you said when you were speaking about the definition of civility.
Sure. Civility, formal politeness and courtesy in behavior or speech. That's all civility is. If we can keep that in mind, we could maybe start repairing how we interact with each other on both sides of the aisle.
So,
you know, we have all these rules that try to inject in the Senate, Jules, we have all these rules that try to inject civility into the process. And I think when you go into the Senate, you see this civility in the sense that you're talking about it. But as soon as they walk out the door, you know, it's completely different. I used to, when I was a child, this always struck me because I went to a big Catholic church, you know, and we'd all go in and pray and hold hands and sing. And then people would swear at each other in the parking lot because they couldn't get out, you know. This is the feeling I'm getting in Washington now. You know, that they're on the Senate floor and you know, Madam President, I rise to speak for the gentleman from California. You know, we go through all that, but then they go out and they say the most horrible things about each other. So how do we get beyond that? The speech is important, and how do we get, how do we inject it in places where there are no rules written down? Or are there rules and we're just ignoring them?
Well, you know, this day and age with social media and YouTube, you know, if somebody just puts up a phone, hits record, and within seconds, what you're saying goes on YouTube. We need to remember that we are 24/7 professionals. We elect you to go to Washington to govern for us, not to spew hate, not to, you know, again, it starts from the top. If you want us to change, then you have to have civility both in the office, when we'll call the Senate floor the office, as well as outside of the office. And again, you know, just keeping mindful. Yes, sometimes we get a little heated and we might say something that maybe wasn't appropriate, but it seems that's the norm now. And we seem to get the shots and lower to each other to really degrade the other side. And what for? To pander, you know, and people will say, well, it's, you know, to pander to their side of the aisle, to or for their constituents. But we don't send you up there to get into a verbal fighting match. We send you up there to move our country forward and deal with issues that we have, not put your feet in the sand and, you know, cross your arms and say nope or elect somebody just because it's going to make the other person angry.
So you mentioned something about social media, and I think that that might be at the crux of the question that you're asking, Michael, too, is because social media is in the hands of everyone. It's not just the few. It's not just the editorials and the opinion sections and the professionals. Anybody can spout an opinion. So I think that's why its standards have lowered, because it's encompassing everybody. So there's no code of honor, if you will, amongst those who ascribe to social media. So I think that's part of the problem, is that the mass attendance to it. But then ironically, when I was studying social media a couple weeks ago, only 25% of the population is on Twitter, for example. And so it doesn't represent most of the people, even though people on Twitter like to think that it does, which I found interesting. Because, you know, with the president tweeting as often as he does and everybody else joining in and all these people having millions of followers and, it, you know, et cetera, et cetera, I thought it was the norm, but it's really not. I don't think 25% says a lot about what's going on in the Twitter world.
I'm sorry, Julie.
Sorry.
You don't need it anymore because you got the 24-hour news cycle. So as soon as you tweet something, it's all over the news. I'm sorry, if you have a comment, go ahead and make it, Jules. But I have another question, which is, what are you connected to this? How do you think the role of anonymity, you know, how does that add to the problem? Because that's what I saw in Chicago, you know, where you were out on the street and people were very polite, but then they're in their cars, you don't know who they are, they're, you know. And it seems that we have the same thing on the internet. You have a Twitter handle. Many of these people are anonymous. So do you think that adds to it? Are we less likely to be polite if nobody's watching?
Yes, I do agree that that is adding some fuel to the fire. It kind of goes back to, you know, the bullying. We can all say and do these things behind our screen because nobody's watching and I don't have to answer to anyone. So my handle could be at, I don't know, you know, whatever you want to put, and then turn around and go to work as an etiquette consultant. Unless somebody actually, you know, takes the time to research that nasty handle, you know, at nasty one, we'll just say, no one will ever know that it's me being, you know, the other side of me. So,
right.
It's very easy to sit behind your screen when nobody knows who you are and say some very hurtful things. But to the point of, you know, the Twitter and not many people being on there. But once it goes on the internet, it's there forever. It can be, you know, it gets forwarded to Facebook, to the news cycle. It gets forwarded everywhere. So, yes, Twitter may not have a huge audience, but the internet, everyone is there, and it goes, unfortunately, to the various platforms.
So, well, to that point, Jules, there was a director fired just about 10 days ago for tweets that he made over 10 years ago that he took full responsibility for, and his mea culpa was, I was trying to be provocative and I was trying to be funny, and I, you know, in hindsight, I obviously made a mistake and blah 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 blah. But he got fired for something that he did a decade ago, you know, well before he was a director. So, I mean, talk about it being around forever.
Yes.
Yeah. Our digital footprint doesn't go away.
It does not. It absolutely does not. And it's going to be there forever.
Right.
Well,
and that's why,
you know,
there's no privacy either.
and just no. so our listeners understand that this subject is not trite. We're not just talking about, you know, holding a chair for someone or opening a door, although those things, in my humble opinion, are very important. But we're talking about, you know, we have kids that are committing suicide over being bullied on the internet.
Yes.
By anonymous people. And like I say, in politics, I just think it's become horrible. So
yes.
This is important stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And again, you know, back to Maria's point, you know, being or your senator, being anonymous has really added to it because, yes, children and teens do commit suicide. They have this false sense of empowerment when you can do things with nobody knows who you are, and then they just feel empowered because they can stay and do and be who they in their mind want to be online as long as nobody knows who they are, and then they go out and then they do these things, and it's across the board. I give the same anti-bullying, you know, speak to teens, to college, you know, and also the fact that what you put online is there forever, your digital footprint, because it will follow you getting into college, getting a job, your seat in, you know, in the Senate or the House may be taken away because of something that you put up that you thought was funny, but it turned out to be insensitive.
Well, you know, Al Franken is the perfect example of this, right? That he's a comedian before he's a senator. He's a comedian, and he does this thing, you know, we all know where he was, you know, attempting, where it looked like he was fondling this woman who was asleep, and, you know, and he was trying to be funny. I don't think, you know, he was in a room full of people. I don't think he was trying to really sexually assault this woman, but he just thought it was, you know, it was funny, and he resigned from the Senate over it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's, it is something that follows you forever.
So Jules, how is the business of etiquette since we've seen such a breakdown in, I know that we've always, the human condition is always such that there's been discord and disagreements and conflicts and wars and, you know, what have you. That isn't anything new. But as the senator was mentioning earlier in the broadcast, it seems that we've reached a new low, or have we?
We haven't really reached a new low. I just, in the political landscape, yes. We definitely have, and it's because of the, again, you know, it starts at the top, and we need to show respect. And one of the things that our president does is he doesn't attack the issue. He gets dirty about things. So that, with the exception of that, it really hasn't changed. You know, we still find manners lacking now with little kids using iPads as entertainment at restaurants. They no longer have, studies have shown that they no longer have empathy towards other people. They don't know how to have communication, and they can't make eye contact when they speak. So it's an interesting time right now in the etiquette world because of things like that, because of technology.
Well, so besides, I'm sorry.
Have you not seen families like that? I see two parents and their two kids, and the kids are on their devices the entire meal. There's no conversation going on. And I think, what's the point? Why don't you just leave them at home with a sitter? If, you know, or is this just convenient and saving you the money for a sitter so that they can be babysat by their electronic device? I'd like to outlaw electronics in public myself. I mean, like, I met my buddy for lunch. I said, I've spoken to my daughter and I've emailed with my sons and I'm now here with you. I get to turn my phone off. So for 2 hours, I had it off because he's more important than anything that's going to come through on my phone.
And let me ask you about that, Jules. Besides the top down, how about the bottom up? You know, I often tell the story of when I was a little kid. I mean, little, 4, 5, 6 years old. And I used to go to New York City. I lived outside the city, and I'd go to to the city with my grandmother on the bus, if there was a woman standing, my grandmother would make me offer my seat to that woman, and this always played out the same. I would tug on some woman's skirt, and I would say, "Would you like to have my seat?" And she would always look down at me because I was so small, and smile and say, "Oh, thank you, sweetie or honey or whatever," but that's okay. And I would have to say to her, "You don't understand. I can't go back." If I go back, my grandmother, and tell my grandmother you don't want the seat, my grandmother will just push me back in the aisle and go convince her. You know, it's not optional, okay? And till this day, it drives me crazy. I don't ride public transportation much, but when I do, and I'm on the metro, and I see pregnant women standing when men are sitting down, it drives me out of my mind. I want to just go and shake them. And say, "What? Yep. Don't you have a grandmother?" You know. So, what about that? What are we not teaching our children the way we used to?
No, we're not. Again, top down. At home, the top are the parents, grandparents. Yeah. You know, in some cases, you know, by private clients, I may have a nanny who I work with, and I instruct the nanny and the children on, you know, table manners, et cetera. So whoever that top is for that household, that's who's responsible for teaching. You know, and everybody's taught manners, but we need to not only teach them, but enforce them. And some people, you know, and that's where we seem to, there's a breakage, you know. It's like, oh, okay, fine, I don't want to deal with you. So
here's a top-down story. I'm at lunch in Malibu this afternoon at a white tablecloth restaurant. I go to the bathroom. The dad has on a baseball cap, and there's a mother and a son and daughter. And I think, what's happened? I've been to fine steak restaurants, and the guy has a baseball cap on. And I'm like, what? You chose to put that on your head. It didn't just fall on you. So what are you thinking? And I don't understand that at all. So there's the top down. The dad's modeling wear a baseball cap in the middle of the day, in the middle of a restaurant, whatever.
Well, that brings up another important thing, Jules. This is a fight I've had with my son for years. If he comes to the dinner table with a hat on, we say, take it off. And his side of the argument is everybody does it. You know, so what – and I don't accept that, you know. I mean, I understand it's a custom. I grew up in, like Maria, I grew up in the Catholic Church. It was okay for women to have their heads covered or women mm-hmm. to sit at a table with a hat on, but it was never okay for a man to do it. It's another thing that drives me crazy to see these guys in baseball caps. But you know, what about that? What about society's impact on this? Because that is my son. He's like, I go out, Dad, and everybody at the restaurant has a hat on. Well, you know, I don't care, you know, but how much of an impact does that have that as a society we've lost our, you know, sense of many of these
of
what
etiquette.
I would call polite customs or etiquette. Yeah.
Yeah. And you are absolutely correct. I get that quite a bit. And I also see it quite a bit, you know.
Right.
This person's doing it. That's okay. Well, that's fine. You know, again, it goes back to. If that's what you want, if you and your friends do, then do it out there. But in here, these are the rules. And this is what we do here. You know, and I find it, you know, funny that is, I hear that so often. But XYZ does it, or somebody on TV, you know, someone in, you know, pop culture, they do that. Okay, well. Let's not talk about, you know, this, we're the here or the now. You want the job. These are the things you need to follow. There are these things that are called rules, just standard code of ethics, standard, you know, whatever it is. And these are the things that you have to follow if this is where you want to work, want to go to school, want to eat in my home, etc.
So what is your take on ball caps in restaurants, Jules? And I'm not talking McDonald's. I'm talking you sit down and you're waited on.
It doesn't matter if it's McDonald's or a five-star restaurant. They do not have a place at the table or national anthem or Pledge of Allegiance.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that rule
I've seen people, not men, not take off their hats with the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm like, isn't that like at least sacrosanct, that one thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Or I see people talking, sitting down and talking. It's like, and I will tell you, even if I go to a Super Bowl party at someone's house, once that Pledge of Allegiance, you know, when they do that whole, you know, ceremony, yeah, I start looking at my friends and they know, stand up and be quiet.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, you know, I remember, Jules, going to baseball games with my dad when I was little. He was a veteran. And people not only standing up and taking off their hats, putting their hands over their heart, but singing the national anthem. I'm not even sure we know how to sing it anymore. You know what I mean? People don't sing it. Of course, I'm a politician, and when I go to events, and there's an honor guard, we, of course, all the politicians stand up, put their hands over their heart, take their hat off, because they've been trained to do that. They know that not doing it, you know, will reflect badly on them. But there are many people in the crowd that don't. And I'll tell you another story. My brother, this really surprised me. My brother, who's a veteran, is called out by the governor of Ohio because he's president of a college in Ohio, and the state has decided that anybody who's a veteran can get free tuition. I'm sorry, can get in-state tuition to any public college in Ohio, regardless of where they're from. And so they passed this new law, you know, to help veterans. And so my brother and another veteran, who's president of a college in Ohio, are called out for the ceremony, right? Because they want to publicize that, you know, that they care about veterans. And they asked my brother to stand next to the governor, with the, on the right side where the honor guard is. And my brother refuses. And they don't understand it. And my brother says to the governor's people, says, well, I'm not active military, and I refuse to stand in front of the American flag and active military. If you want me to stand behind the active military people, I'm happy to do that, or stand behind the governor, but I won't stand in front of an active military person holding a flag. And they didn't get it. They're like, what? Like, they've never heard that. And Paul said to me, oh, that's just standard protocol in the military, that retired military don't stand in front of active duty personnel. You know, active duty personnel are always out front. So even the hierarchy doesn't get it sometimes. I just think it's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're laughing at that, Jules.
Yeah, because if at some point you know somebody's telling you that's not protocol,
right?
You know, take a step back.
Exactly.
This thing, it's called Google, and it's a phenomenal tool. You plug in a few, you know, keywords, and up will come things. You know, things will pop up, and it'll tell you things. So, you know, this day and age, we're not knowing, you know, quote unquote, not knowing something or the proper protocol. Okay, you know, maybe you don't know it at first, but then go, you know, get the research, you know, do your research and figure it out. And then, oh, okay, you know, you are correct. I apologize. How about X, Y, Z? But when someone's telling you, nope, this is not the way it's done, you know, go do your research and figure it out. And, or before, you know, this is what you want. How about doing your research ahead of time? I don't know. I'm a big fan of doing your research and know what, before you ask, know how and what to ask. And if you got something wrong, apologize and take their word for it after you do your Google research.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but there you go again. It doesn't get much higher than governor in a state. And there is the top down, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it goes down to every day. I just had dinner this week with another friend, and he's in his 60s. And he held the fork when he was cutting the steak like a fist.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, shouldn't you know better? Don't you know better? Don't you care? I mean, I hadn't seen that in a while. And it was like, I mean, I still, now that we're talking, I vividly recall me just being like, what? And of course, I would never say anything, right. But I'm just surprised that it runs the gamut. You know, well, this is a white collar, college educated professional.
Well, you know, what about the fact that speech has changed as well? This is another thing that bothers me, that I hear, and I got in an argument with one of my kids about this, that I hear young women use the B word to refer to other women, you know, in a not in a derogatory way like, oh, I hate that bitch, but more like, hey, bitch, you know? And right. I try to impress upon them that I think they do their sex a disservice by doing that. And also young black men that use the N-word, to which my daughter argues that they've empowered the word. That's their, my younger daughter says, no, Dad, you can't use that word. But when they use it, it empowers them. And I'm like, are you crazy? I don't think it empowers them. I think it degrades them, whether I use it or they use it. What do you think about that? What do you think about the fact that our language has changed so much and we seem to, you know, not respect each other linguistically anymore, if that's a proper way to frame it?
Yeah, absolutely. I always try to remind people that perception is reality. So if somebody is, you know, using the B word as, you know, just conversation, you know, hey, like as you said earlier, and I oversee, you know, overhear this, my perception of you is going to be one way, you know, versus the young lady or gentleman next to you who doesn't use language like that to describe, you know, the person or to, you know, as a friendly, you know, in friendly terms, who you have your core friend and you're inside the house. And if you act that way, you know, that's fine as long as it stays there. But when you're out in public, again, you're going back to perception is reality. That's, do you really want that perception of you to be somebody's truth? And the N word, I don't understand that argument, you know, how they can call each other that. And because again, if I see two people saying that, you know, to me, I just think it's a horrible word. I don't understand that, you know, it could be my age that, you know, I see it differently versus the younger generation because so much time has passed. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's why we cringe, because we associated it to something negative.
Well, we knew it as pejorative, and they're using it just as currency. And I have heard your daughter's argument, Michael, by the way, before. But I think what is missing is the history of the word. And if they really knew the history of the word, they wouldn't be using it. And I think women are guilty with that. We haven't shared the history of the glass ceiling with the younger generation, so they don't know how much we've fought for. I think people of color haven't shared the history of it. I think HIV/AIDS hasn't been shared with the younger folks, that they think that they don't have to worry about it. There's a little bit of a lack of communication, I think, intergenerationally, and I'm not quite sure why, because what's the, you probably know this, Michael, better than I, that if you don't study history, you're apt to repeat it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a classic saying, those that don't learn from history are apt to repeat it. And, you know, I don't know how society changes those things, Jules, because I think that today, for example, when, you know, we've dealt, maybe one of the more recent civil rights struggles we've had is over homophobia. I think if I use pejorative words, or if gay people use pejorative words to refer to each other, I think my daughter would have had a different opinion. I think that, you know, or young people in
general
would
have a different
opinion. So How do we change? How does society change this thing, these things, to say that some of this stuff is all right and some of it's not?
It starts with changing the narrative. And, you know, and any one of us, especially if you have a platform and you have, and you're an influencer, you're seen as a social media influencer or an influencer in some capacity, you can change the narrative. That's all it is. It's just changing the narrative back and, you know, reminding, you know, to be civil and, you know, let's talk about the history, why certain people find it offensive, even if it is within the race, to be called, you know, one word. It has to start somewhere.
Well, and the thing about it starting somewhere is there has to be a sensibility, because like me with texting, I spell out every word. I use grammar. I use punctuation. I go back and add commas. I would never say, see you soon, the letter C, the letter U, and then soon. That's like fingernails on the chalkboard, which is an archaic statement since they all use grease boards now. But I think that has lent it also to the laziness, because it's quicker, it's easier, it's more expedient. It gets the job done. Why not?
Exactly. And so actually one of the conversations that I have is differentiating when you write an email, you put, you know, the email, if you are applying for a job and you're sending someone a text, don't do C, like you said, C with the C and then the U, you know, spell it out. Remember punctuality. This is your image.
Yes.
What you put out, again, back to perception is reality. Anything that you do, text, email, YouTube video, live, Facebook, all these lives that we have, anything that you put out, that you endorse, that you share, gives us an insight to you and your character.
Well, you know, when I was working my way through college, Jules, I worked for one of the preeminent male haberdasheries in Washington, one of the top male clothiers, and they used to pound that into us. You know, we had to take classes. If you work for this store, you had to take classes, like I think it was twice a month, and they would teach us of everything we needed to know about fabrics and everything else. But they would always say, look, not many people see the house you live in. A few handful of people see the car you drive. But everybody sees the way you dress. So always dress like, you know, because that leaves an impression with people that you meet for an instant sometimes. And they also used to say, you know, they were fond of saying, dress for the job you want, not for the job you have. Mm-hmm. And you know, so they pounded that into us, that that's the impression you leave with people. You know, if you show up and you're sloppy and your shirt's hanging out and you're not, you know, then that's how people tend to think of you. So I think that's really important. But let me ask you a political
Michael,
question.
Michael, let me say that once to that point. I've been in radio for 25 years, and radio is the spoken word, right? Theater of the mind. I always dress in suits or slacks. And all of my colleagues would say, Maria, you're on the air. Nobody can see what you're wearing. I said, yes, but that's how I feel. And so like sometimes television crews would come in to do a story, and my boss would say, I was going to call you and tell you to dress up, but you always do, so I knew I didn't have to bother.
Well, and you know what? I do too, Maria. When I show up for any event, I mean, I show up for a barbecue, and they say, well, you know, it's not appropriate to wear a suit, but I'll wear a tie and a jacket or a tie and a sweater, because I say to people, you know, I always say, people elected me, and I have a responsibility to act like I give a damn, whether they give a damn or not. Mm-hmm. You know, so I agree with that. And let me ask you this question, Jules. When it comes to the type of society we have, a democracy, capitalist society, do you think that adds to the degradation of civility? I mean, Karl Marx would say, I think, that if you focus on the individual, you lose sight of the collective good. You know, I mean, that's kind of a simplistic way of saying the way he thought, but he thought that we were doomed as a society because we focus on the individual and we never focus on society in general. Do you see that as a problem with civility? Is that part of our political problem, that it's all about me, so I don't give a damn the way I dress or what I say or what I do, because you don't matter, it's just me?
A little bit. I do believe, you know, it's a little bit of the day and age of it's, you know, I'm important, me, mentality that we have these days. So yes, I would, yes, that does play a part of it. There's, you know, there's different, it's like a wheel, different spokes have, you know, there's different reasons why we are going in this negative, sometimes negative, because it's not always bad, direction.
I like that example, because it's not any one thing. It's more of a combination of other contributing factors. And I'd say that, Michael, our generation, when I was raising my children, I insisted that they call my friends by Mr. and Mrs. Yeah. or Mr. and Dr. or whatever. Yeah. And I was the only one. Everybody else's kids called me Maria, which would also make my back stand up straight, but I can't tell them how to parent their children, and they can't tell me how to parent mine. So they would say to me, so I suppose you want your kids to call me, I mean, my kids to call you Mrs. blah, blah, blah. And I said, that's up to you and your children. And my kids used to answer the phone, hello, this is Nicholas. So that whenever anybody called back in the day when we had landlines, they would know to which child they were speaking, because I had four. So I wouldn't assume that people could guess. So Jules, this is decades, because I have kids who are millennials now. And so my children were raised in a way, talk about them probably being odd birds because of the way I raised them. And they have seen when they went to college that I remember my son saying he went to USC. He said, I hope we'll open a door for a gal. She just walks right by. She doesn't even say anything. I'm not the bad boy. So I don't even get anybody's attention because I'm a gentleman.
Oh, that's too bad. And my daughters are also millennials. So one is a little bit more on the conservative side. And the other one, when she was graduating, she was at Davis. I was giving her the same spiel that I was giving my older daughter. You remember when you start going for interviews, you wear this, you do that. And she straight out told me, that's not how we do it anymore. You know, basically, mind your own business, in so many words. Like, okay, you know, and I just bit my lip and respected her, you know, that she is an adult. After a few interviews, she did call me and say, okay, I'm ready to hear you now. All
right, then. Wow, that's great. And let me just say, Maria, I feel your son's pain, because when I was in high school, I had two friends. Now, they were both very handsome, but they were also bad boys, and I was the guy that mothers always liked. So, you know, that was the kiss of death. You know, yeah. that girls would say, well, if she likes him, there's got to be something wrong with him.
Right.
So,
it's the friend.
So I really feel their pain. So what can we do? We're starting to run out of time here. What can we do as individuals, Jules, and as a society to turn this around? Is it just a matter of respecting each other, or are there you know, like exercises you can do to, you know what I mean, or things that you can do? And by the way, I just want to say, Maria, we had a very, very dear friend who insisted that the kids call her by her first name. And I used to say to my daughter, I don't really care that she wants you to do that. When you're
right
around me, you call her Mrs. You know,
right,
or Ms. or whatever other title you want to give her, but you don't call her Pam.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
and I call
her Pam.
It's
not up to them. I mean, every one of mine, they would say, oh, that's not me, that's my father. And I said, nope,
yeah,
that's you.
Yeah.
You're Mr., you're Mrs., you're Doctor. Yeah.
So what can we do, yeah, Jules? Can we do...
A public service campaign?
You know, can we make our kids write 100 times, I will hold the door, I will hold the door, I will hold the door. you know, and better yet, can we make politicians and congressmen and senators do that? You know, I will be polite outside the confines of a media camera.
Well, and then there's Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys. He said, no player of mine is going to stay in the locker room during the national anthem. You're going to be on the field and you're going to be standing.
You know,
he's the only one that said it so far.
Can
so,
I tell you what, you know, the fact that people don't get this, that they don't get why this makes people angry to see people that make, what do they make, like $750,000 a game or whatever ridiculous salary they get, where, you know, there is a part of me, it's not that I believe that I'm a big supporter of Black Lives Matter, but I've even met with the Black Lives Matter people, but you know, I there's a part of me that just wants to say, hey, pal, why don't you go to another country and see if they'll give you $750,000 a day for running around with a ball?
Or do it on your own time.
Yeah.
Your personal politics.
If you want to help,
Second Amendment right. But not at my expense, not at your owner's expense, not at the lease expense, not at the licensing agreement expense. Do it through your foundation. Do it in the neighborhoods that are being affected by it.
And not at the expense of all the kids that are watching, the millions of young people that are watching that look up to you. You know, if you really care about Black Lives Matter, go give money to the United Negro College Fund. Go, you know, go protest police brutality where it actually happens, not on the football field. I mean, first of all, there's so much brutality on the football field, you know, it's a little hypocritical. But yeah, what can we do about things like that, Jules? Should we institute rules like Jerry? You know, God forgive me for agreeing with Jerry Jones because I'm a Washington football fan. You know, and I'm sure I'll get nasty letters from all my friends who, you know, because we to actually be a Washington football fan, you have to stand up and take a pledge that you hate the Dallas Cowboys. That may be even more important. That
America's
may be
team.
Even more important than liking the Washington team. So what do we do? Do we enforce rules like that? Would that help? Because that would come from the top, right?
That comes from the top, and I just got to say, I am a huge, lifelong Dallas Cowboy fan, so one more reason why I love them. But so we'll put that aside now. Yes, somebody has to start and change the narrative. And yes, you do have a right to do things, but as Maria said, do it on your own time, not on the you know, at during football season, during the game, and during when all eyes are on you. I have a friend, and we were talking to, you know, well, I just don't care, you know, I'm this successful, I don't care how I eat, I don't, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's great if you don't, but remember, you're in a position where eyes are on you. Younger generations are looking up to you.
Right.
How about for them? You know, so, you know, yes, you know, go, if you believe in a cause, you know, and you're going to make a stand, and that's fine, but also follow up the verbal with an action. Go and not just because cameras are on you, so I'm going to go volunteer over here. Do it all the time. I mean, you know, walk, what is that, walk your talk? Or
right, walk the walk, talk the talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to, everybody who can't just... needs to start remembering just basic manners, is making sure that your actions make other people feel comfortable. I get it. Sometimes we get heated and we get caught up and we might say something that, oops, I shouldn't have said. Absolutely, things like that happen, but that shouldn't be the norm. And it seems like that is the norm these days.
Well,
I would agree.
Let this be an example to our listeners. I like Jules, and I'm being very polite, even though she's a self-admitted Dallas Cowboys fan, and that just shows you that it can happen. And by the way, Jules, you should know that I have a group of friends that are willing to do an intervention if you want to get rid of that horrible habit of rooting for the Dallas Cowboys. I can't help thinking, Jules, that you know. We, you know, what you say about it being from the top down, you know, that it's so affected politics because because in every avenue of society now we've lost this civility, and for some reason it's become acceptable in our political discourse, and I just think it's done so much damage, and I hope that changes.
I think it's time for you to write a letter to the editor, Michael, with that.
Yeah, you know, I've had 17 of them published.
The Washington Post.
I've had 17 of them published now in the Washington Post.
I know.
So I think they have a nut file on me.
You have
down
quite
there
the cred there.
But,
I think what Jules is saying, you could do that in your arena. I could do that in my arena. Jules obviously does it already in her arena. That.
Yeah.
We lead by example, and I also like what you said about it's not just talk, it's doing. So, and which is congruence, mean what you say and
well,
say what you mean.
And, you know, this is another example that I just have to throw out there real quickly because this happened to me recently, is I got the opportunity to speak in front of to address the oldest Boy Scout troop in America on their 100th anniversary. And I had people that work for me say to me, are you going to do that? And I said, of course I'm going to do that. And they said, well, you know, they have some of their policies are homophobic. And I'm like, are you crazy? I was a Boy Scout. These are Boy Scouts. These are children. You know, I just couldn't get over that. And you know what? It seems that that's another thing. We look for an excuse not to, you know, instead of looking at the positive things and saying, this is an organization that helps boys grow up, turns boys into men. There's a lot of good things. We look for the one thing that we don't
like
about
it. Well, and they've changed those policies, too.
Huh?
They've changed those policies, too.
Yes, they have changed those policies. This was, and it's funny, because this was about 8 months ago, and then right after this, they changed those policies.
Good.
And they didn't have a problem with gay Boy Scouts. They had a problem with Scout leaders.
Exactly.
And now they've changed that, you know, a few months later they changed that policy. So now they have gay Scout leaders too. So they have come full circle. But, you know, it bothers me that we look for that one thing that we don't like in people to discredit them totally as if we're all perfect. Well, Jules, we're out of time. I got to give a shout out to the people that have signed onto our bill. I'm so glad that you came back on the show. We so much appreciate it. Please tell us before we let you go a website that people can come to or how people can connect with you.
Sure, absolutely. The website is juleshirst.com, JuleshHirst.com. And I thank you both again for being gracious hosts and having me back.
Aren't you sweet?
Well,
thank
you,
Jules.
Sweet.
Thanks for what
you're
you
right.
do.
Thanks for being so civil.
And tell your daughter, I'm an Aggie. My both brothers are Aggies. My cousin
oh, awesome.
Is an Aggie. And one of my sons is an Aggie.
Awesome.
So we have UC Davis in the family.
But are you a soulless Dallas Cowboys fan?
I'm a Los Angeles Rams fan.
Okay. All right. We like the Rams. They don't bother us. The Cowboys bother us a lot. Okay. Thank you so much, Jules.
We'll be in touch.
I'll be taunting you if we can put together a halfway decent football team this year, I'll be taunting you during football season.
Sounds good. I look forward to it.
Good
okay.
Healthy,
and we hope we
Thank
can
you,
have
Jules.
You back again because you are a really wonderful guest. And I think this is very important work that you're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'd love to anytime.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Thanks,
good.
Jules.
And now before we're off the air, let me just say that we've had a resurgence of interest in our statehood bill that's on Capitol Hill. Now, we've been lobbying several Republicans, and we're hoping to get one of them to sign on soon. But in the last few weeks, we've had 5 new co-sponsors. So
that's amazing.
So we have a shout. 5 new in the House. We've had 2 in the Senate, which we've already thanked. And in the month of July, we actually had 6. And we've already thanked Representative Green from Texas, but we also have Representative Castro, a Democrat from Texas' 20th district. Thank you, Representative Castro. Representative Schiff, Another one from California. You guys are the best. California is still
leading. We have the most, right,
and co-sponsored. Yeah, and you got two more this month. Adam Schiff, who's a Democrat from California's 28th, and Representative Luis Correa, who's a Democrat from California's 46th district. Boy, you got a lot of members of Congress. Also, Brian Higgins, a Democrat from New York, and Charlie Chris, who's a great guy and a Democrat from Florida's 13th district. So to those five new co-sponsors, Castro, Schiff, Higgins, Correa, and Chris, thank you so much for standing up for the people of District Columbia. And it's great to be back. And Maria, you have the last word.
I'm just curious, is there a formal process that they go through to become a co-sponsor of the bill? Like, do you have to have a wet signature or electronic or what?
Well, no, it's pretty simple. They call up the sponsor of the bill, the person that put the bill in, who is our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton. They call up her legislative person and say, we want to be co-sponsors.
So it's just as simple as that?
Yeah, just as simple as that. And
nice.
They add them to the
nice.
Bill. Yeah. So hopefully, we're getting there.
You've got to do something with the momentum. And
yeah.
I just want to thank our listeners. We know you've got lots of choices, and the fact that you continue to choose our broadcast to download and listen on demand or listen live, we're grateful for that because we know there's a lot of noise out there. So on behalf of the senator and myself, because we've been doing this now, I think, 2.5 years, Michael.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
It is.
Here I get older by the day, and you stay young and energetic and wonderful. I don't know how that happened. But thanks so much for all you do for me, Maria, and for the show. We really take great pride, both of us, in the fact that, Maria says that, we agree on things, and the truth of the matter is that we have one big agreement, and that is that we want to have a civil discourse.
Correct.
To get ideas out there. And for me, I mean, maybe we should have asked Jules about this, but I very much respect who Maria is. So no matter what she says to me, I'm always civil with her because I have great respect for her, and I think that's the bottom line. We have to learn to respect each other.
Right. I was saying to my friend about you, I said, you just happen to be a Democrat and I just happen to be a Republican. I've never held anybody that against anybody.
Yeah.
Why should I? Why does that mean?
Why? Because there's more important things like being a Dallas Cowboys fan.
There you go.
Right. You want to hold against somebody. But thank you. And to all the Cowboys fans out there, I really don't mean it.
Yes, I do. Have a great
thanks.
Week.
Yeah,
America.
You too. And we're going to play Let's Be Friends.
Why can't we be friends?
Let's be friends. Why can't we be friends? Okay. See you next week. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Give the people their right to vote.